plate a potential nugget.
I want to talk about coaching, Roger. You know, in the book at various points, you talk about how Roger has gone about choosing coaches at different points in time. You know, Peter Lundgren instead of Carter goes through a phase of having no coach instead of Peter Lundgren. Then Stefan Edberg, even Ljubicic, Severin Luthi has been with him along the way. Can you talk a little bit about his choice of coaching and what he's sought from the coaching, if I may use the word intervention, but with a coaching partner? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think it's a mixture of loyalty and then need for a fresh voice from time to time. And I think he was pretty good, not ruthless, but I think he was somebody who was pretty good and pretty pragmatic when he needed to make a change that he did. And he often had a situation throughout much of his career where he had two coaches because of his schedule being as it was and kind of the insanity of following a pro tennis player around for 11 months of the year. It's pretty brutal for coaches to do that as well as for players to live that life. So if you have two, you can alternate. But he, you know, it's a timeline that in a way is not entirely natural because Peter Carter, this man we've spoken about already, this deeply influential Australian on Roger and also a very close friend, he died in his late 30s on his honeymoon in South Africa after more or less being, you know, told how great South Africa was by the Federer family, how he had to go there and went down there and just freak accident, was killed in a road accident down there on safari or heading towards safari. Hmm. And that was a huge moment in Roger's life. Definitely made him a more serious person about fulfilling his potential. And that was maybe a piece we didn't discuss when we discussed the mental game and the evolution. But Peter Carter certainly, I think, would have continued to play a big role in Roger's life and career later on, even though Roger made a very difficult choice that you referred to there when he chose to go out as a full-time professional. You know, in the late 1990s, he decided to choose Peter Lundgren, former Swedish pro, you know, who was connected with all those great Swedish players of the generation, Villanders and Borgs and everybody. Hmm. And he chose him over Peter Carter because he felt Lundgren had more experience at the highest level than Peter Carter had. But you know, Roger describes that decision as an excruciatingly difficult one and very hard. And I think he always would have kept a connection with Peter Carter. So Peter Carter might have been somebody in his career for 20, 25 years in some way as an advisor. Didn't work out that way. He had to find new support systems after Peter Carter's death. And he's somebody that he would bring in after much consultation and much thought. He would bring in different people to be the key person in his life. He did go a period of time without a coach. When he split with Peter Lundgren after winning the Australian Open, or just before winning the Australian Open in 2004, after a great 2003 season, which was a pretty bold move considering he was breaking through, to separate from your mentor at that period was quite surprising at the time. But I think he felt like he needed to, for a bunch of different reasons. I'm not sure I fully understand all of them even now after writing the book, but I think there was a need to kind of do things on his own to create the strength that comes with that. Might have been some issues with Peter off the court. I don't know. I know Roger's always denied that. So when he went off on his own, he still had some advisors within his circle, guys he was close with, a guy named Reto Stubbley, who was a friend of his, coached him. But he was really making his own decisions for well over a year. And then he hired Tony Roach, who had been a great Australian player, coached Patrick Rafter, coached Leighton Hewitt later. And he was a more traditional sort of X's and O's kind of coach and hard work and hard yards and all that sort of thing. That lasted a certain time. And then Roger decided, I think, follow a bit the Pete Sampras model and hired Paul Anacone, who was had coached Pete Sampras throughout much of his later career. And Paul's a very gregarious, engaging, thoughtful guy, definitely not a Tony Roach type. So I think Roger, in more of his mature phase, decided he wanted more of a confidant and a person, an advisor, as opposed to somebody who would be a taskmaster by any means. And that's kind of the approach that he kept throughout the rest of the way. Severin Luthi came in around 2008, 2009, I believe, in that sort of period there, maybe even a little bit earlier. And he remained sort of Roger's advisor, hitting partner through the years, but there was always somebody else with him. Paul Anacone, Stefan Edberg, who Roger idolized as a youth and wanted to bring him in to kind of work with his idol. But he was working in concert with Severin Luthi. And then at the end, Ivan Ljubicic, who was a very close friend of Roger's from the tour, good mind, good analyst of the game. I think Roger really respected him and wanted to have his influence. But it was always kind of a two-headed thing with Roger. And I think he liked that idea of a committee. Let's get together with my team, with Paganini, with the coaches of the moment, certainly Severin, and then he was Paul or Pierre at the end, Paul or Ivan, sorry, at the end. And he would have team meetings a lot and discuss best way forward. What kind of string should I be using? What kind of tactics should I be thinking about for the coming year? You know, what should my schedule be? Should I skip the French Open, the clay court season? There's a lot of, you talk about Roger with him and with his team, and there was a lot of collective decisions that were made, even though he was the guy out front and a strong position as the great player that he was. But it wasn't it's my way or the highway. He liked to feel that input. He'd take it all in, and then he would decide.
It's fascinating to see how players pick coaches. In one of my early conversations at the podcast, I was speaking with Viren Raskina, CEO of Olympic Gold Quest. When I asked him about how they pick coaches for different players, he used the example of how they found a coach for Marie Com.
How do you pick a coach in context to a player? So I'll answer it with Marie Com's example.
Sure.
In 2009, women's boxing was introduced in the London 2012 Olympics for the first time ever. Mary was already a 5-time world champion winner, but in the 46 kilograms weight category and in 48 kgs, her last one. Now, when women's boxing was announced in 2009 that it would be for the first time in the London 2012 Olympics, before that boxing was only a men's sport.
Okay.
But the least weight category for women was 51 kilos. So that means Marie Com, who was originally a 46 kg boxer, had to move into 51, which is 2 weight categories higher. It had been unheard of for a boxer to go 2 weight categories higher and win an Olympic medal.
Wow.
Now the challenge was, because when you're fighting in a weight category, not only you need to put on the right kind of weight, but you're fighting against taller opponents.
Sure.
Which is a major technical challenge in boxing. If you're fighting against taller opponents, that's a big challenge. So we researched a lot and found out a coach by the name of Charles Atkinson, who specialized in taking fighters up weight categories.
Fascinating.
And making them into world champions.
There are 3 things I want to say here. Firstly, I think leaders need to think about what is the development need and find a coach who solves that need. Secondly, there's something to be said about the style of the coach and whether that style fits well with the leader. I tell my prospective clients that there are some situations where you need a tough coach who has hard conversations with the coachee and holds them accountable, even if it makes them extremely uncomfortable. I've realized that this is not something that comes naturally to me. When I look at my journey and the coaching process and where I've been able to add value, it's in those situations where people have leaned into the process and are keen to make the difference and pull me in rather than me pushing them. Thirdly and finally, I think there's something to be said about cumulative context. Federer had Severin Luthi, who was a constant all along the way through his journey, while he was changing coaches on the other end. And I think that context is powerful. When I work with leaders on long retainers as a sounding board, the cumulative context often helps me give them inputs which is contextually relevant and appropriate. At the top, I believe that knowing the context is often 80% of the work and sometimes can make all the difference.